This is the planning commission?
What?
Friday.
Testing, 4, 3, 1, 10. Okay. Welcome everybody to the planning commission meetings. This is Thursday, September 17th, and the time is about 6:05 PM. The first item on our agenda here is call to order, which we did. Second item is public comment. There's nobody here that wants to be in public comment, so we will close that and proceed on to item number three on our agenda, which is approval of the minutes from July 28th and August 18th planning commission meeting. I would entertain a motion to approve them. Oh, I guess that would help too. Recognize voting to be John David Riggs and Lori Ann Spears for the first time.
Second.
Second time. Good. We've already started.
Just there we go.
Are we entertaining a motion then?
We'd entertain a motion to approve the minutes of those 2 days of July 28th and August 18th.
I move that we approve the minutes from July 28th and August 18th, 2015 planning commission meetings.
Second.
Second. Any questions or comments? All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Passed. Next item is review action on the conceptual plan to subdivide Brett Levine's property located at 3989 West and 4000 North in the PR 22 plan residential zone. Probably wrong address. But.
The wrong address, yeah. 3939 West, 9600 North.
It is, that's what it says, but my glasses aren't saying.
I know, you got the same problem I have.
Chandler?
Yeah. I have my binder for city council next week, not for the planning commission tonight, so I'm shooting from the hip a little bit. But we did discuss this last month, and I've sat down with Mr. Levine on a few occasions, and we've talked over what processes are open to him at this point in developing his property. As we discussed last month, and as I've discussed with Mr. Levine, our city code requires that any subdivision be brought up to compliance with the current subdivision code, meaning that every subdivision would need to have the necessary public improvements installed, these being curb, gutter, sidewalks, any asphalt improvements, street right-of-ways would need to meet certain city standards. So when Mr. Levine proposes to subdivide his property into a flag lot, it triggers this subdivision code, which would mean that the city would require that all these improvements be made. Now, the crux of the matter here is that the nature of Mr. Levine's property is such that putting these improvements creates a large financial burden on him as he develops this property. He has some issues that some of the properties, I don't know that they would have to necessarily work through. Chiefly among them, I think, would be the pole there, the telephone pole with the Comcast lines, and there'd be necessary resplicing of the wires there. In order to put in the necessary improvements, move the poles, remove vegetation, trees, shrubs, put in the sidewalk, and grade it, and put in a necessary retaining wall there that would be required because the topography, I believe, it was close to $90,000.
Correct.
So Mr. Levine, his proposal is to do the subdivision without those improvements. Is that correct as well? Also included in that would be they would have to tear up the current utility connections to the home, the water. So the home is not connected to sewer right now. But the PI would also have to be redone in order to meet the changes in the topography, the changes in the grading after all the work would have been done. So there's a lot of costs there that would be incurred by the developer, Mr. Levine, in this case. We discussed this last month, as you recall. So the from a staff's perspective, we've always told Mr. Levine, as much as I love you and your family, I know his family, they're great people, I don't have the ability to overturn the city code. It's, I don't get any votes in this matter. And this, the Planning Commission has to approve stuff based on code. The avenues that are open to anybody that feels that the code was wrongly interpreted, or that they the code was correctly interpreted, on the other hand, but they feel that they would need a variance, there's avenues open to them, and that avenue being the Board of Adjustment. They could take their appeal to the Board of Adjustment and make a case before them, showing them the nature of the land. And at that point, based on the Board of Adjustment decision, the Board of Adjustment would make a decision, and if they granted a variance, he would come back to the Planning Commission with that variance, saying, I see the variance from the city code to proceed with the subdivision, excluding compliance with this certain city code. Now, and I've been quite open with Mr. Levine about this, and with anybody that I've spoken to about Board of Adjustments, or the Board of Adjustment, is that getting a variance can be quite difficult, because there are certain statutes that the state has outlined that need to be met in order to get a group variance granted. It's not just, it's not arbitrary. There's a 5-point test that needs to be met, and some of those points are that there has to be something special, there has to be some consideration with the property that uniquely affects this property owner that does not affect other property owners. There has to be, the spirit of the law has to be observed. There's these 5 tests, and you can read about in your code, but I would sit down with Mr. Levine at that point and go through that. So are there any questions from the Planning Commission on this development or on this proposal? At this point, it's a concept plan. It's not anything concrete. As you move towards preliminary, that's when you would do the engineering, that's when you would do the any tests that the city requires, and those can be rather expensive. So I've told Mr. Levine that we would want to have the Planning Commission make a decision on this sidewalk and the public improvements in the concept phase before you go out and get engineering done before you spend a significant amount of money on plats that may be rejected. So that's why we're here tonight, to discuss that in the concept phase.
So you're concluding or hoping that he gets the variance, and after he gets the variance, he would come back to us with the regular engineered plan, or still with the concept?
With the concept plan. With the concept plan and the minutes from the Board of Adjustment, or a written decision from the Board of Adjustment showing that they've granted the variance, that he's met the requirements set out by the state, and that you can proceed with the concept plan and the preliminary plan with it not meeting certain aspects of the code.
So he has approval of the concept plan, then he can go ahead and put in the sidewalks.
And at that point, we can go ahead and put in, we would go ahead and with the preliminary plan to get the engineering done, just to show a subdivision plat, show where the line's going to go, where the street dedication's going to go, and we move to that point. But at that point, we would already have made a decision on the public improvements on his street.
My next question is, that street Cedar Hills?
Partly. He fronts on it, but it's about half and half. It's really, this is, as you recall, this is down in the...
So he's the last property in Cedar Hills?
Yes. To the west is Cedar Hills, to the east. North, and to the east is Pleasant Grove. It's a messy area. There's no way around it there. It's a mess down there.
So if this is approved and everything else, will he be required to put his current house on our sewer and water system?
Yes. As part of any development, that would be necessary. County code or city state code. There's a requirement that if you're within 300 feet of a sewer line, you have to connect. There is the connection, and it goes up Landon Court, which is a cul-de-sac to the west of Mr. Levine.
No, it's that one. It's okay. It's okay.
There is a sewer connection that is available to him at that juncture there. So that's already stubbed, ready to go.
Is our sewer line run up that street or is it terminated there at that cul-de-sac?
It runs from that cul-de-sac into what we call Harvey and then down out the TSSD outfall.
But it doesn't continue up that Swens or
we do have a sewer in that road 4000.
Not 4000, I'm talking about the one he's on. It's
Swens. That road, yes, the city has a sewer line that's there. That sewer line comes down from Canyon Heights. However, the road sits much higher than the house. So in order to connect to that sewer, there would have to be an ejector pump to move the sewage out.
So you're proposing
there's a connection to the southwest that he could connect to, and then it just gravity flow out.
How would it get to us?
He's already stubbed. That's part of the development to Atlantic Court. They stubbed their sewer up to the property line. There's a current sewer easement there, okay. And he could easily connect. So sewer is not an issue here.
For the new house or
both houses?
Does he have city water now?
He has city water now, and that shouldn't be an issue either. Mr. Levine, do you see that being an issue at all? I don't see any utility being an issue from the city's perspective.
So I guess the question is then, what's the fate of that road? It looks like it's Pleasant Grove Road now.
It's mixed right now. He's kind of, you're at the juncture where it kind of becomes Cedar Hills, because part of your property extends into the road, so by virtue of that, it's in Cedar Hills. Part of it's Pleasant Grove.
I've got 1 foot into the asphalt. That's my property line. That's Pleasant Grove, north of me.
Yes.
So Cedar Hills is, it's not Cedar Hills. If I get on my driveway, I'm in Pleasant Grove.
Yes.
Street.
Yeah.
So what are the plans for that? And that's what Cedar Pleasant Grove's case we're going to deal with.
I'm sorry, can you reword your question?
Let me restate that. What are the plans for that road? I mean, I went and drove and looked at it the other day.
Yeah.
And
Pleasant Grove.
It is a mess.
They've had a Pleasant Grove's aim for that road has always been to keep it a country lane, which.
Except for the part that's in Cedar Hills that now has curb gutter and sidewalk and it's white.
That's white, but as you go east from Mr. Levine's house, there's a bottleneck and it's limited visibility on either side, and as you connect to Canyon Road, it's actually quite dangerous. So from the city's perspective, we've always seen that road going from Canyon Road all the way to 4800 North Canyon Boulevard as being an arterial road for the city, being a major east-west road. I know a lot of parents, a lot of families use that road to get from Canyon Heights to Deerfield in the morning, so that road becomes, for as small as it is, it's a heavily trafficked road in the city. Pleasant Grove Road, like I said, is to keep it a country road. There's no intention on their end of widening that road. In fact, I've heard from some residents there that they intentionally let their trees overgrow the road to discourage people from driving down that road.
But then they cut them off.
Well, then they come back. They eventually get cut back, but there's a reluctance on Pleasant Grove's part to opening that road up to be an arterial road. Yes.
There's one thing. I mean, we do have a lot of traffic there, but they stop on the north side of my property because they see a truck coming or an SUV coming. They stop right there. And the people that stop north of my property, they can see the road all the way. If we go with the sidewalk east of the end of my property and they stop there, they cannot see the whole street. If somebody is coming on, they can see part of it, but not the whole street, because of the trees and the hedges, and that's Pleasant Grove. And I don't think Cedar Hills has any say to it what Pleasant Grove wants those residents to do. So that's another dangerous thing that I haven't even anticipated. building the sidewalk, it would be a dangerous thing.
What would be the cost of putting in the sidewalks and running the sewer up to your place? A rough guesstimate.
Putting in the sidewalk?
Putting in the sidewalk and running the sewer to your place with that special pump.
I don't know about the sewer.
The sewer's already stubbed to
it. Sewer is not a problem.
No. If he goes this direction, this is where the sewer line runs, it's higher. This one's lower than his. He's got a septic field here from the house. So connecting to that's easy.
The sewer's stubbed it to his property line.
Just a matter of running a ditch out there and putting some pipes from his current.
Sewer's an easy connection here.
Yes,
he actually has sidewalks. The sidewalks are matched.
There's two places that they can put in a sewer. The problem is
sidewalk.
The problem is the sidewalk, because the current sidewalk on neighbors to the west, the sidewalk terminates
at the pole.
At the pole.
The pole is in the middle.
The pole, if you build the sidewalk around, then it doesn't meet the road profile. It's kind of, for lack of a better phrase, it's kind of a perfect storm of incidences that occur right there at that juncture. It's really weird, the placement of some of those utilities, especially that power pole.
So I guess, so really what we're looking for tonight is a denial or a recommend not approving preliminary plat, so then, because that sends it to the Board of Adjustment.
He can go to the Board of Adjustment.
Because we can't make a grant of variance.
No, we this body does not have the ability to grant a variance.
So it has to go to the Board of
Adjustment. It has to.
So, and what you're saying is better to send it now than maybe.
I would prefer to get it. I would prefer to sit down with Mr. Levine after there's been a denial and say, let's work on the Board of Adjustment application and go that route.
Because that's the only way it's going
to be. All I will take him to get before the Board of Adjustment.
They don't have a regularly scheduled meeting. It's on an as-needed basis. So,
so if you got it done tomorrow, it'll be the next day.
We I'll be honest, though, we have had issues with the Board of Adjustment getting a quorum. So, yeah.
It's been 9 months since this. I'm getting close to 80 years old. Do I let my wife? I assume I go first because nationally, I guess men go first. You guys are lucky you can stay here for after we've gone. So. But anyway, do I leave my wife with all that problem? Gentlemen, I have, it's a long story, but I have lost $6 million due to Ben Laden. I owned a big western town in Panglish. I had nothing after that. I lost everything, almost including my house. And now, this is the only thing we're immigrants, legal immigrants, I would say. And we've been here 56, I've been here 60 years. My wife has been here 57 years. And this is our only income. This is retirement. And I started in January just to get a simple, well, maybe it's not simple for you, for me it was pretty simple. Do I have to build a sidewalk or not? Now I got to go to the adjustment. I don't know how long that will take. By now I thought at least I have a foundation in my backyard and we can start building, but that doesn't happen. So I've been to this twice, well actually three times. Last time I wasn't here because I wasn't notified of that. And today actually I was lucky to get a call from David. Maybe you told David to call me, I don't know. But I didn't know about this meeting. Now I like to find out, do I build a house or just what, or do I die first? This is, to me it's getting a little bit ridiculous and upset, as you can see. And so, I have talked to many, many, many people. They all say, what do they want? It's 150 feet more of sidewalk that cost me close to $100,000 because of the situation I am. The retaining wall, and on top of the retaining wall, another fence. I have to pay 14 feet by 150 feet for the street, the telephone pole, but you know, that's Common sense tells me, hey, just leave it as it is. If Pleasant Grove ever wants to do the street and everybody on that street has to do a sidewalk, so be it. I have to do that. Maybe I'm not here at that time. I don't know. But anyway, but Pleasant Grove is not, I talk to them. I do have another solution, and that's just go to Pleasant Grove. Because my two neighbors east of me both had the same situation. They built a house south of them, and they are in Cedar Hills. I like to do the same thing. I have lived here for 45 years, long before anybody else here lived there. And Pleasant Grove is fine with me. And they would take me. And I leave my property in the back in Cedar Hills. I have no problem. It makes common sense to do that. So
at this point, our hands are basically tied. We have to obey the rules, regulations, concepts that are set down by the city for us. And that's what we have to make our decision on. Basically, we're all with you. We sympathize with you, and we do everything in our power to help you. And the way to help you right now is to turn you down so they can get before this Board of Adjustment. And hopefully, like I say, if he can write that up tomorrow, maybe by next week, you'll be in front of the Board of Adjustment and then back to us again quickly with a concept plan and proceed that way. So hopefully, by the first of the year, at least you'd have a foundation up.
So you're saying to me now, if I go to the Board of Adjustment and they say, well, yeah, okay, you can do it, then you would approve that?
We're with you.
They have the power to issue a variance from the code, and we don't. Our job is to make sure everything meets code. And their job, the Board of Adjustments, has the power to issue a variance from the code. So if you come back with a variance, then that gives us permission to proceed, even though the development doesn't meet code. Does that make sense?
And everybody would vote for that, or would there still be some
issues? As long as you have the variance, we don't have a problem.
Yeah, okay. I think you'd be okay once you have a variance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But this is the major hang-up on this, and always has been.
Yeah.
Past that, it's just getting variance.
Okay.
And then we go to council.
You have to go to council. The council still would respect the variance that was granted by the Board of Adjustment. I can't see a situation where they say, no, we're going to be more than the Board of Adjustment's decision.
I agree.
Can't speak to that. I don't see a situation where it is.
Can you take a motion?
I would entertain a motion.
I make a motion to deny
Recommend.
Deny.
This is a concept, and the Planning Commission actually has the ability to approve, deny, or
okay, we're going to deny the concept plan to subdivide federal property located at 199 West, 4004, and then the PR's 20 Planning Commission.
Do I hear a second?
Second.
All in favor? Any further questions? All in favor? Aye.
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 The motion is approved. So now you need to rattle his cage.
I'll call you.
I rattle you, all right.
Okay.
One question. What if they say, no, we won't? Then what?
Can he appeal to the council?
No, at that point, the appeal would go to a district court.
Either that, or you go to Pleasant Grove and say, annex the front of my property, I'll leave the back of it.
That makes lots of sense.
If the Board of Adjustment says no, that's your legal recourse, then it actually becomes a judicial matter, and it goes to the district court.
Yeah.
Otherwise, your option is to go to Pleasant Grove and say, I'd like to boundary adjust in Pleasant Grove, and then it would be under their building code.
Do they have sewer in Roseville?
No.
They're talking about it.
Yeah.
But there's not.
He's all right.
But this, I'm okay with my septic tank right now. My septic works, and it doesn't have to be.
It's not your house that it'd be the new house. house.
No, the new house is. I have no problem. It's been.
It's.
Yeah, it's see. Right there.
And you got
right
sewer right there.
Yeah, exactly.
No, because it would still be touching the properties to the west.
And South Lookout. North Lookout.
No,
Pleasant Grove. It's not creating an island from Pleasant Grove, is it?
It shouldn't, because it's neighbor to the east. Looks like there in Pleasant Grove.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, folks. Appreciate that. At least I know where I'm going.
Sorry, there are 9 months to get to this point.
I hope that, I can enjoy that money sometime.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Good night now.
Get that one for
hi.
Thank you.
Some no reasons.
Yeah.
Next item.
Yeah, this is the same now. That shows the cul-de-sac.
So that my question's always been on the access, because the property would be contiguous, but the access the access would be
you came out on the west side.
I mean, the access would be on the east side of the home, so the house would be on the west side. So would it create an island for his property that he's keeping? That's what we would need to look into.
So you could have run it down the west side.
I don't think that there's space. And there's already a road, there's an existing access road there. On the east side. So, this is where we are. It's a mess.
Next item on our agenda is discussion on the guidelines for design and review of the planned commercial development projects. Did anybody ever type up what we've submitted to you?
I've typed up some stuff.
I thought we were to have that tonight so we could look at it.
I don't have that. What we were going to talk about tonight, I thought, was the rest of section four. We talked briefly about the height. Jeff, you had typed up some rewording on the structure height and passed those out for 4.2.1, 4.3.2, and 4.4.2. But we were going to go over the other portion of that. Now, one thing I've discussed with the council and the mayor is that I would really, really like to have something done on this by November. Because we're going to have some changes in the Planning Commission come January, and I really don't want to start square one. Really don't. I'd like to wrap this up this year with the current Planning Commission. It has been a lot of fun. So keep that in mind. I know we've got a lot of stuff to go through. Actually, I don't think we have a whole lot of stuff to go through at this point.
Really not.
We discussed did we discuss parking last time? I believe we did.
We did discuss parking.
We did? Okay.
Yeah.
So then what's left to discuss is really the individual zones, and each zone has its building setbacks, structure height, building size, building facades, landscape materials, and then that's it. And there's a lot of overlap. So as we look at those, if we picture the commercial zone, the first zone, the office retail, which is 4.4 mixed use office. Currently it's built out. That's not to say that there won't be any redevelopment there, but it's currently built out. Now, as you look through the commercial design guidelines, and as you think about that subzone, are there any issues that the Planning Commission has with the current design guidelines that they'd like to see addressed in the event of redevelopment in that zone?
I have one comment that probably rolls into the other zones.
Let's hear it.
The building landscape. If we're trying to be environmentally responsible, are we going to allow xeriscaping type landscaping? That would be the same for all three zones. The palette is essentially the same.
The palette is essentially the same. Now, let me ask you this. Would you prefer, and this is based on what the commission thinks, but there has been a lot of talk about that. And if I can also add to that, language that stipulates that the
open space is open to the public, that it's open, it's visible to the public, that it's accessible to the public. In that way, that's something that we've talked about with specifically Rosegate when they came back with their courtyard proposal, said, hey, no, 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 let's open that up, because otherwise you're building, you're kind of defeating the purpose of the open space.
Private park, yeah.
And I agree with that. Would the Planning Commission prefer to just, rather than having adding drought tolerant plants to the land, to the landscape palette, would you prefer to have a reference to the state code on, because the state always puts out drought vegetative materials that are drought tolerant that they consider xeriscape. Would you prefer to just reference that rather than add to the list, or would you like to do
a little bit of that?
I'm not a botanist, so when you start listing plants,
I don't know that we're gonna be
I'm
pleased with everything that's
on the state list. That would be the only.
Or would you rather have it be a caveat of drought tolerant vegetation or drought tolerant landscaping may be used and approved by the city council with recommendation from the planning commission?
Didn't we do a xeriscape exception to the general code?
To the general code, yeah. But this is one of the few areas where it's very specific on what trees are planted where, and it goes into the specifics on this tree shall be planted in this planter box if there's a parking strip. And it's very specific. Where the xeriscape code was really meant for more single-family residential yards. So I don't know if that's something that you'd like to just add in as a catch-all statement, or really dive down into
the stamped concrete section.
Yeah.
That's the biggest mistake of all of Walmart, is the stamped concrete.
I've tried to get in touch with them to remove that. They asked me.
We made them put it in.
Well, I know, but they called me because they get so many complaints, and I think they go through so much cart maintenance.
It'd be cheaper for them to tear it out.
That they called and left a message that they wanted to tear it out, and I called them back twice. I went down to the
Give
store
me their
trying
number
to talk to them, and I can't get through to anyone down there. So I have tried.
We need to revise that for color, but not necessarily stamps.
Yeah, they can always color the cement.
What's that? Yeah, that's what we do with. That's what Hearts did.
Yeah.
But, yeah, the stamp stuff.
Because those things happen. Taking a cart over that, if you had false teeth, they would fall out.
So anyway, that needs to be addressed.
Okay. So on the, can we go back to the xeriscape? Because this is going to apply to all three zones.
Yes, it is.
It's
the same for
how
all of them.
I mean, how much xeriscape do you want?
Well, I'm just floating the question out there. On these specific developments, if it's not xeriscape, it's not going to break my heart.
But what if it was limited to park strips and planter areas and areas that you don't necessarily play in or walk through? It's not like you're going to have a picnic in an area that's been just a rock garden.
Well, a good example would be or Walmart, that stretch there along the Cedar Hills Boulevard looks terrible. They don't keep it up. It's full of garbage in it all the time. Half of the plants are broke down. And that would be a perfect place for xeriscape. Just rock and weeds.
Yeah, but you still, I wouldn't like to see the grass go, but I could see where their bark is going to rock. But
that's where I mean, where the bark is.
That would
be,
rock.
I don't know, use the rocks to throw at the store.
That's what the kids are doing.
Well, in 4.1, we should add it does say, the landscape area shall help create a park like atmosphere with a lean pedestrian corridor designed to promote pedestrian activity. So, if you're talking along the area of park strips and stuff where people are walking, we have changed that specific sentence there. If you want a xeriscape, you know, we're not going to play in the park strip or sit on the park strip.
No, you're not.
But it's pedestrian corridor. It specifically says park atmosphere. So we need to specifically change that.
That's exactly what I'm talking about.
Right.
Is when I think of parks, I don't think of park strips. I think of the big grass areas that you actually use in access. So.
So we have to change that specific sentence.
You could reword that.
Yeah.
But do you want to limit it? What I'm asking, I guess maybe I wasn't very clear. Do you want to limit it to being areas that you don't typically use for recreation or pedestrian activity? It's just areas that are more visual. Can you just crack that door? It has to stay open, but.
Yeah.
It sounds like we wanted that. We want it added in. That's acceptable. I don't think anybody has a problem with that. It's more about scope. In terms of what's going to go in and where it's going to go. And we don't really answer to either of those two questions.
Well, I mean, as I'm thinking of it, right now we require 30% of the project has to be considered landscaping. So if I'm a developer and I'm thinking, okay, well, rocks are a whole lot easier to maintain than grass and trees, so I'm going to give you 30% of rocks.
Right.
We want to avoid that. We want to avoid any really unintended consequence of allowing xeriscape. So that's why I'm saying, what if you limited it to certain areas?
Right. See, I'm looking at 4.1.2, the head on it. Inviting gathering places are often characterized by the incorporation of effective landscaping. You're not gathering in certain areas. Right. Clearly not.
Right.
Walking strips, these things, they're not gathering areas. If we said in those specific areas, xeriscaping things could be considered.
Or do you say 30% maximum of one third, which can be xeriscaping, not to exceed.
Oh, there you go.
Is that one third? Are we getting to an arbitrary number here? Is that really what you're comfortable with?
Well, that's a good question, but it's a different way of approaching
whatever
that number is.
Well, I mean, you could say limited xeriscape may be allowed, but then you get into the problem we have now where nothing's defined or determined or become
a little. Well, that's really like what you said. If you limit it to a certain percentage, at least they know how much they can.
For starters.
Or you could, like Trevor said, you could say, you know, islands, like the islands in the middle of the parking lot.
Well, they say pedestrian corridors right here. So, with the main pedestrian corridors.
We're not going to solve this tonight. I think xeriscaping is the right thing, but I think we need to both define it. In the absence of any standard that we're going to follow, we need to figure out what that standard is. And then secondly, in terms of where we, or how much we're going to allow, we could discuss for the next 2 hours.
Let me ask you this then, because you just brought up something I think I brought up a while ago, is definitions. We don't have definitions in our commercial guidelines.
Right.
And this is something I think that both the council and commission have grappled with in terms of scale, density, and other things that were left to be semi-ambiguous are now coming back to
yes.
What did they mean? What did they
mean?
Yeah, if you go.
So, and I don't know that a broad definition section will necessarily be an elixir that cures all of our ills here, but I definitely have thought that that would be something that would lead us in the right track. And I say that because when I'm looking at the code and I'm reading a section of code and it says family, right? I can go back to the definition section of the code and read exactly what the city considers to be family. So, and it's not 16 unrelated people living in one house. I know you can all fit in there, but it's not that. It's not what the city views as a family. Whereas before, it may have been something a little more nebulous. So I don't know if having a definition section is something that is in some areas I think it's needed, and sometimes I think it might be excessive. So I don't know what this body feels. I'm just throwing it out there.
I think it's a good idea. I went through the city of Lehigh's zoning code, and they're a lot bigger than we are, and they have to deal with a much broader array of issues than we do. But they have a definitions section right up front.
Is this in their commercial?
I think
area?
It's in their, well.
Because generally in each title of code you see a definitions section.
If I remember right. It's right at the beginning of their zoning code before you get into any of the zones.
Because we have that. We have that, and I think that it would be appropriate to use, if there's a definition there, we don't redefine it for this. We use it verbatim from the city code. But that's in our code book, and I can turn to it right here. We have a definition section. It's 10.10-2.
Well, their definition section seems to define everything you find in their zoning code.
So then, so that leads me to my next question. Are we missing definitions?
That would be the other way to look at it. I would be more concerned. I wonder if it's a better idea to have a single definition section rather than having multiple. Because, for instance, residential. I'm reading in their code about residential, and I'm not finding anything that tells me exactly what that is. I bump back to residential. They have another conditional uses, retirement home. What's that? Why have to go to their definition section to define that?
Yeah.
But it's all in one place at the beginning of their code. I would. My first reaction is I'd rather see that than a second definitions section somewhere else in the code.
So what if, rather than adding a second definition section here, it's definitions that are added to that. And I'm more comfortable with that because then you're not putting the same definition in two locations and it's getting changed in one and not the other. And so it's more consistent. So if there's a definition that we feel like needs to be added to the code, and let's say it is something like scale, scale shall be measured in such and such way, height, distance, or height and width, and whatever it is that we want to do. But then we have to have a measurement in this that gives you, otherwise, why have a definition of scale? Why have
well,
a definition of
I think there are words like scale and density that are going to vary based on which zone you're in. So I think to some extent, you're going to be explaining what you mean by that in each of the subzones. I don't think that goes in your definition section, other than the general.
No. But how to calculate it will. So like,
right.
So let's say that you're doing
definition. Defined.
Right. Now let's say it's defined, but
number of dwelling units per acre of land.
Okay, it's there, but there's not a measurement given. And that's my point. Is we have how it's done is units per acre, and we could have told you that 2 years ago.
But there's no.
But when we look at the commercial design guidelines and it says things should be considered based on density,
that's not a doubt.
What are we considering? Height is.
But I would even
height
challenge.
Height is nailed down where we can say,
you could
this is a number, this is how it's measured, you meet it or you don't. Density is something that's been more ethereal, where what are we comfortable with? Where do we run the risk of being perceived as being arbitrary and capricious in our judgments?
Well, I would even challenge that dimension, that definition.
There's probably a lot you can challenge.
Well, density was the one issue we were going to talk, one of the issues we were going to talk about tonight.
It's a major one. What would you add to that?
Well, that just talks about dwelling units.
Right.
So that's just where somebody lives.
Can there be a different definition of density for commercial, like 3 commercial units per acre?
I think we need to talk about. Because density is typically governed, as I understand it, in two ways. Number one, minimum lot size, so that you get a maximum number of units per acre in residential zones. And we have that. So in that sense, we do govern
density. That's established.
When you go into a commercial zone away from residential, you're typically talking about height, setback. That's how you're governing the density. You're saying on a lot this big, you can only build a building this tall and that big. So if you want to try and cram 300 units in there, I can't say no, but you've got to fit it within this box.
But on top of that, they said you need to have 30% landscaping. So you take your total parcel, add in the setbacks, put in the height, and then you say you have to have 30% landscaping, and it leaves you with kind of a building in. But then, it still doesn't answer the question of density.
That's why I challenge this, because typically density has been seen to only address dwelling units. Once you get into senior care, senior living, people don't define that under the umbrella of dwelling units. Now you're talking about assisted living, congregate care, that kind of thing. And nobody puts out, not that I've seen, nobody puts out a number of units per acre. It's just fits within this commercial box that we've created, whatever it is, and however it's governed. You can cram as many units as you want to in that unit that meets your pro forma, which is what we're dealing with right now in landscape. So the reason I'm challenging that is I'm wondering if we shouldn't be going beyond just residential units and defining some sort of maximum units of any kind per acre. And there I don't know what the standard is. Define that. You know, Rosegate defined it as 50 units per acre because of a much, much smaller development across the street.
But is their judgment, is their determination of
density just as arbitrary as anything I could come up with. I mean,
yeah, they were just looking at what was...
They're looking at across the street, but they're taking it on a much grander scale at that point.
But isn't it all arbitrary?
Sometimes it honestly feels like it, though.
At some point, you got to put your foot down and say, this is how much we feel is appropriate. Again, back to Lehigh, I was talking to their planners this week, just to get a feel for how they deal with it. You know, they average 3 units per acre. That's it. And you can put...
Throughout the whole city?
It's residential.
Residential?
Yeah, and you can get bonuses up to 4.2 units per acre if you put more landscaping in, or if you do this, lower the height of your building, or whatever their incentives, so that you can up your density. You can put 12 units per acre over here and 1 unit per acre over here, as long as it averages out to be 3
right.
or 4.
And we do similar things.
But it's only residential.
It is only residential. So we encourage, like in the case of Lake Shore Trails, we encourage them to cluster their development in an area that is open to development and leave the steep landscaping as needed, and then dedicate that as open space. So we encourage that same type of clustering, but not, we don't have any language in it.
But now we're in a situation where we've got somebody who can meet our commercial density requirements by hitting setbacks, heights, and so forth, and they can cram as many units into that box as meet their pro forma, and there's nothing we can do about it. People are questioning, isn't this a density issue? Well, yeah, but there's no rule that we have, we don't have a leg to stand on in terms of trying to govern that density without seeming arbitrary and capricious. We have nothing written down that says you can't put that many units on that little bit of acreage.
So would you propose adding in language that does give limitations?
I
don't know what that number would be. I really don't.
And no one else does that.
On the commercial?
On their Congregate Care Housing. Is that
for, let me ask you this before you read that, is that for an overlay zone, or is that for
commercial zone?
This is in their commercial, and they're under the Chapter 11 commercial, there's Article 1 senior housing, and then it's got a definition and area requirements for congregate care under maximum density.
There you go.
What are they saying?
It says congregate housing developments shall have a maximum density of 24 dwelling units per acre. In mixed-use developments, density shall be calculated using only the immediate acreage of buildings, parking, landscape areas, and roadways specifically associated with the housing development.
And we can't hit Rosegate with that, but that's something that I think we need.
Going forward.
Yeah, going forward. I think that's something. Actually talked to PG, and they either don't know their own zoning code or didn't know what I was talking about.
Yeah.
I mean, they have a decently sized building going up there.
Yes.
Over 55 congregate care building.
Yeah, it is.
Quite large.
I mean, we're double that.
For it. Not quite. It's a little more than that. I think right now we're at 35.
Per acre.
If we go, do some quick math here.
Or is it 12 acres?
I'm uncoordinated in mapping that, so there is a track back to commercial. We go 8.5 because it's an 11.4 acre, and I think that we've always determined that about 8.5 sits in this mixed use zone. Mm-hmm. If you divide times that by 291 units divided by 8.5,
it's 34.2. Just like ours is.
So
that's a dig that up. Well, that's what I think we're missing.
34.
With 34.
34. So it's higher than theirs. And if you were to take that same measurement for, because we've backed out the land that is neighborhood retail. Because I don't think you should be able to use.
I mean, that's okay. It could be 50. It could be 60 because we have nothing that says what they can't exceed. Is my point. And
right.
And I think that would be. I'm glad we're at only 10 more per acre, but it could be whatever they want it to be. And right now, I don't have.
The Charleston is actually very similar to that. If you can't take just. Piece that the Charleston sits on,
which according to PG code you would only take that piece.
Yeah, according to that piece, you only take the parcel it sits on and divide it by 70. It's still close to 35.
Yeah, I'm just suggesting that we need.
And I don't know that PG's. I don't know how they determine that. I don't know if that's a magical number of some sort.
I was going to say we don't have to be the same.
We don't have to be the same.
So much bigger than we are.
But I think that they have the kind
but
of
to say idea. But to say that any suggested density requirement is arbitrary is
I don't think having any suggested density requirement is arbitrary. I think that it might be perceived as arbitrary if you were to say to Rosegate, no, you don't meet our density requirements.
I'm not suggesting anything regarding Rosegate.
There's other issues at play here, but I hate to be perceived as arbitrary. So that's why the height thing is great, because we can say this is our code for height, you meet it or you don't.
But isn't that arbitrary?
Not when it's codified, and it's
right.
generally
so
accepted.
Saying,
so
let's codify.
We're saying the same thing.
I'm saying codify the same side.
I want to see this. I'd like to see it nailed down so that there is.
That's
so
nice.
So broad. Okay, well, let's do it.
The other way to make it somewhat non-arbitrary is to find out what other people are doing and say, you know what, we're a community similar to theirs, or not, or we're dissimilar in this way, and so we've modified it because of this dissimilarity.
Yeah.
But that's really the only way I see of doing it. How did PG come out with 24 per acre? I don't know. Did they base it on someone else? Did they just pick 24? I don't know.
They could have just picked 24, and that decision could have been arbitrary, but that's the code.
I guess it's like any zone we have.
Like,
I'm saying pick a number that works for Cedar Hills, and whatever that number is. Because a lot of people don't think 34 works for Cedar Hills. It is what it is. That's okay. I'm not suggesting changing any of that. That's already in the shoot going. But going forward, like you said, right now we don't have any language preventing 60 per acre. We need to get something into our guidelines and that.
They also limit it. They say congregate housing development shall be limited to a total parcel size of not more than 8 acres. So they even limit that as well.
So then you're really limited to the building max approximately 400, a little less than that. You go 8 by 24. Is that 92?
496.
392.
496.
I can send you this link if you want.
Yeah.
But that's in their code, right?
This is in the Sterling. I'm looking at Sterling Codifiers. Yeah, this is in the code.
That's
it was 2013 they passed it.
Well, we're talking about guidelines, but what I've heard is that our guidelines are mentioned in our statutes, therefore they have the weight of code. Is that right? Is that what you care?
That's my understanding.
That's what's been told. I talked to some.
So putting it in our guidelines.
Putting it in code. It's not in the code book, but where we reference it in the code, and this is, and really, it comes down to, this is when I have a developer come to meet with me about a commercial area, he says, what do I need to do? Well, I hand him the guidelines, because they're more detailed than our commercial code, if you've ever gone through that, it's really not much there. So I give him the guidelines and say, hey, this is your rules, this is your rule book.
And that's the right way to do it.
And that's...
Usually
so if we don't hold ourselves to that, if we don't, that's the standard we're saying is acceptable, basically. So, and what that
is. Yeah, well, I've talked to a couple people that were on the plane when some of these guidelines were drafted, and their comment was...
In the original 2002?
Yes. Okay. And they said, well, there was nothing proposed at that time. So they're deliberately ambiguous because they had no idea what was coming. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They wanted flexibility in there because who knows what's coming.
We have the benefit of 13 years of hindsight.
So what we could do, if you can forward it.
I just did.
Can you forward it to everybody?
Yeah.
Well.
Then we can just call them.
Just
look at, you know, again, you can do it via email, but I think we ought to look at it and see what we think might be appropriate.
You've got another meeting yet this month, too.
Yeah. And we don't really have a whole lot on that meeting's agenda, so we can revisit this.
Is that next week?
That's next week.
No. It's 2 weeks.
Okay.
Is it 2 weeks ahead?
Yeah, I looked it up tonight.
From Tuesday. Well, yeah. We're on Tuesdays now, aren't we?
Yeah.
So about a week and a half. That's another time to look at that and think about it.
Yeah.
It's next Tuesday.
Well, it's tonight, 29th. We have council next Tuesday. So
yeah, you get yeah, every Tuesday is the same for you.
I just show up here on Tuesday nights.
Put the wrong reminder tonight.
Well, I think well, on so density, I, we need, that's a good idea.
Okay, so let's plan to have a discussion on density that night, on 29th.
Can you say less dense, more dense? We're going to define that. Maybe density changes for each subzone. And are we also going to say less dense is this? No.
Oh. I think you actually have a defined number, not to exceed.
You have a not to exceed.
If you say this can be dense, and this zone can be more dense, and this zone can be more dense, I think you run into the same problems we're already running into.
That's right.
We define a way to map
it. It's defined
to say this is 0.6, this is 0.8,
that's
1.1.
Yes.
Right. That's exactly what I'm getting at.
Okay.
I'll send this around to this is Leah. I'll pull the density.
Do you want me to just photocopy that and send it out to everyone? I can do that.
Let's go back to zero-scape.
Okay. What if instead of opening that can of worms?
I brought it up. I opened it. Let me attempt to put the lid back on and smack it down. In the commercial zones, I'm perfectly fine saying we're not going to even recommend xeriscape.
Okay, what if we look at the plant list and include some drought resistant plants?
I don't think it would be good to have a little bit. I mean, I don't want to make it too different than what we already have planned.
But I'm just saying we could expand the plant list to include drought tolerant plants. And then they can use the same, you know, you can put drought tolerant plants in bark mulch like they have now. And I mean, without specifically getting into xeriscaping.
Does the state's, and I have not been there online and looked at this, the state's xeriscaping guidelines, do they have pictures, photographs of the plants?
Somewhere it does that I looked up. I don't know if it might have been the Jordan Conservancy.
You give me a list of 30 plants with their names, and I still have no idea what they look like.
We have landscape architects here in our community. I'm sure they would be well aware. Help us figure out which are the best plants. I tell you,
all you have to do is go down to the state agriculture department, and they'll give you a list. I have a list now at home.
Yeah, we should consult with those folks. It's just amazing the difference a landscape architect made, and I'm not one, so I'm speaking straight. They really know their stuff. These guys are educated and planners know their stuff. These LAs know what's drought resistant, what works well, and what we're going to like. But that's the other thing. There's plants that work here that are just like you said, Glenn, look like weeds. But there are plants that we're going to like that work well in xeriscaping. So somebody needs to take the assignment.
Like John says, we just leave it alone. Do you want to leave it alone? Do you want to?
For the commercial, which is what we're discussing here, I am perfectly fine just leaving it. But I know that we brought it up before, so I brought it up.
We brought it up before, but at the same time, you've got a point where we've encouraged residents to use more water-tolerant landscaping. We've had discussions about the city moving towards using more water-tolerant landscaping. It would make sense in my mind to extend the same provisions to commercial developers. So, it's
would be a lot of work on your plate, but so I lived in the Phoenix area for 4 years and everything's xeriscaped in Phoenix.
Right.
But when you build your house, they're very, because they don't want houses just full of rock on your yard. So they're very specific that you have to have a certain number of plants and they have to be pretty flowering plants. And they're very specific. And so maybe in the Phoenix, in Arizona.
That's exactly what they said. I recall looking at that before. I don't know if it was you that sent it to me or Daniel.
I think so. Yeah, but it was very specific. We had to have still nice looking yards, even though there was a big chunk of that was rock.
It doesn't just say, okay, yeah, put rocks everywhere.
You were allowed to.
So is this something you want to revisit? I don't know if somebody else wants to do some legwork on that.
Well, I mean, you could put in, you know, drought tolerant designs are permitted when, you know, designed by a landscape architect. And you can just do something as simple as that. Designed by a landscape architect and approved by the commission and council. I mean,
because at that point, well,
For commercial.
Well, you then have to add that, like, this tree shall be planted here, and you just take that out. Because we've been that specific before.
We have been that specific, so, maybe the language. I don't think of the language there, because there are some spots where it says, such and such tree shall be planted along 4-600. Such and such tree should be planted along east-west roads. It's very specific.
Each building shall have flowering crab trees planted.
Every 30 feet, something like that.
Yeah. 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 Leadership.
Are we down?
A triple buck. I think we've got to sit down.
I don't know that I like sheep better. So.
Don't come and sit down on the chairs.
Well, I don't think that should change. I think the tree street should stay.
No, it should, because that's you're building on uniformity from past decisions.
This one.
Hello.
You're in for an exciting time. Too many things going on today.
So I don't think some of those things should change, because we've established that, you know, east-west, these roads will be lined with these trees. And we want to continue that, because I think that was the intent,
okay,
was to continue that uniformity throughout the commercial zone, so it didn't look like spot development.
So the areas that are developed by the city, we need to keep it. Well, let's say we have this new street at 4700, 47 south, right?
Yeah.
These trees
that's
need to be on here.
So we would still hold them to that, and I think maybe it is as simple as a clause. What if it was something like?
Because when Walmart came, they had their plant list, and Steve Cruz was the chair at the time, and he went through and said, that won't work, the deer will eat all of those. And he went through and just helped them fix their plant list, but he had that ability, because that's what he does.
I don't have
that ability. But if they hired someone who had that ability and came with a design that said, this is what we want, and it's these dead drop tolerant plants, and this landscape architect says it'll look good.
Well, then maybe we say it's got to be designed by an LA, but it can't exceed 10% of the total site area or something like that, which is roughly a third of the assets of arbitrary.
But once it's in the codes,
that's right.
The arbitrary is the application of code, not what's in the code.
Right. Yeah, that's true. Very good. How we got to that 10%?
Nobody needs to know.
It's put it that it has to be approved by the mayor.
So you're saying so. You're saying, so be designed by an LA.
A registered landscape.
Recommended by the planning commission, approved by the city council.
Not to exceed maximum 10% of the entire of the site area.
10% of the landscape.
Yeah.
Well, that's different.
So are you saying
that would be 3%?
A third, because 10% of the land area is almost nothing, but the landscaped area is 10% of that. Are we going to say a third of the landscaping plan?
Oh, that's another way to say it.
Okay, because I want to be clear there, because if it's 10%, then it's only 3% of the total property.
No, it's going to be.
I meant 10% of the total property. But we could say a third of.
A third of the
landscaping. So if they want to do 40% landscaping, great.
A third of that, so 10% of that has to be zero landscape.
Well,
or
maximum of that. Well, no. What we're saying is a maximum of a third of the landscaped area, which is very different. So if they landscape 40% of the site, which we love,
12% of the total site
exactly
would be allowed to
be zero scale.
Okay, so where does it have?
And we did let add language. Making sure that it is visible and accessible.
We had talked about that, I think, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Visible.
Well, no, I remember you talking about adding it, but I thought we had already added that.
We
had talked about it before.
We've not made any official changes.
Okay.
To the design guidelines. We had talked about adding it in. I brought it up again tonight,
okay,
and I feel like that is something that.
Well,
is
I think
important.
It's important that what you
because
said.
Because then you don't have the enclosed open space. It's meant to be enjoyed by everyone, whether that's
park-like setting means for Cedar Hills, not for the people who live there.
Right. Precisely. So for the xeriscape, I have shall be designed by landscape architect with recommendation by planning commission approved by the city council, not to exceed 1/3 of the total landscape area. Anybody see any gaping flaw?
That would just be a section of
that would just, yeah, that would just be just slide in there.
A third of the landscape.
Do we want to add language like other landscape provisions shall be
baying around.
I know, that's my question.
I think there are
8 acres.
So, Chairman, so no, I think there are a couple of minor tweaks that we need for other sentences to make up
yes,
for that.
We will.
But like 4.1.5K just says all parking islands shall be planted with.
Mm.
If we're allowing xeriscaping in parking islands, then we can't say all shall be.
Yeah. And my mind, those are the perfect candidates for xeriscaping.
I don't know.
Yeah, they really are.
Do we regulate
the
parking islands?
Yes, we do. Yeah.
Okay.
We do. No, I'm reading it right there.
In terms of requiring that.
So
shall be with honey locust tree and Kentucky bluegrass.
Right, but do we say how many parking islands per
yeah,
number of stalls?
I thought we did.
I apologize. I had to come straight here and I forgot to put my code in.
Yeah, I think
the reason I ask is in school work, we get rid of all the islands because they come in with their dozer and they want to be able to bulldoze the entire, or their for
plow.
Snow.
Snow plowing, yeah.
They want to plow the entire lot so there aren't any. Which if a developer
see,
does that.
It also says in L, no shrubbery shall be allowed in islands that reflects trash, gets trampled by pedestrians, blocks car doors from opening, and when cross by pedestrians, and not other creates over contact and growing mediums and hitters and so forth.
So we allow trees but no shrubs.
Yeah.
Trees and grass.
Trees and grass are, shrubs are not.
Tree ring of fir bark and just made it the whole island. There's a lot of bluegrass in the island. It says the tree ring of fir bark trees of beach shall be formed with at least.
I don't think they have any grass in their islands.
They don't have any grass.
At least
it's so hard to maintain grass in an island.
It's impossible.
It's
almost impossible.
Well, I mean, but if you look at it, they've got so in their islands, they've got one tree and then bark.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Isn't that serious, dude?
Pretty darn close.
Close enough.
But the problem is, if you did, I think we need the trees in the island, because that makes a huge difference.
I like,
yes,
islands, and part I like islands and trees, and that's why I'm asking.
Okay, so maybe K is fine.
I think we just leave it.
Just leave it, yeah.
Okay. So let's revisit density then. Let's talk about setbacks then. Now, currently the only setback in the commercial zone is when it's adjacent to a residential neighborhood.
Are you
talking
about 4.2.1?
Yeah.
4.2.1, 4.3.1, 4.4.1. It always just says.
But that's pretty common in commercial.
It's common. Now, do we really want to change any of that? All right, and make any proposals there. I don't know that that's come up. Do you want to increase that setback? Do you want to?
I'm sorry. This would allow you then to have a sidewalk in front of the building immediately.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, if you think about it right now in the landscaping, you require 15-foot separation, therefore landscaping. And then you have another 15 feet, which would be parking stall or something. I don't know what would be there. But then you could build a building. I don't know if you want to increase that, but just 30 feet, which is actually pretty. I haven't heard very many complaints about, like, the Charleston that is close, like, 30 feet adjacent to a residential area. Even Walmart, I don't get complaints about, and that's pretty close as well.
Adjacent.
Charleston.
Charleston.
Just
yeah.
And they're a lot more than 30 feet. Charleston's not much more than 30 feet.
On the south, it is.
Is it?
Well, are we talking about the property line?
From the
property
line to
the building.
Building, you've got parking both ways and not out through the middle.
Maybe it is.
60,
64. Yes, it's easier.
Yeah, it's.
Plus
30 feet's not enough to include the 15 foot landscaping requirement plus any sort of parking or drive aisle. Once you add in a drive aisle, you're looking at 45 feet.
So you're already pushing the building.
Yeah.
You're pretty close.
Neighbors?
Yeah.
I would love to have that be larger. I think
yeah,
it's appropriate for it to be larger.
Okay, well, based on
how tall we're allowing things to be and how much.
Oh, no, I mean, like, because right now we require, if
I know.
A developer would have to have 15 feet of landscaping, and then you add in a parking stall, which is, you know, 20 feet long, and then, so right now we're 35 feet. Then, then you add in a drive aisle that a fire truck can get through, you're looking at another 55 feet.
57 feet.
Another 55
feet? Sorry, 55 feet total.
Okay.
And then when you add in another parking stall, it's 75 feet. So,
but that's not required.
It's not required.
It's what they're doing in Rosegate.
It's what they're doing in Rosegate. But if you were to say, I want to be 30 feet away from a property, that 30 feet is going to be landscape. I don't know how they can otherwise get anything else in there, because you have to access, because there's a 15-foot landscape requirement.
Mm-hmm.
And then that leaves you 15 feet to do something else with. The only other thing you could do is a one-way road. You couldn't have a two-lane road there. It would have to be a circular system around the building. So,
behind a large retail,
let's go back to.
I'm going to the west. What are we zoned west of? East of 4800. The city-owned property.
Oh.
What's that zoned?
That's zoned neighborhood retail.
Is it even zoned right now, the city's property?
You know, I don't.
It will be neighborhood retail.
It will be neighborhood retail.
Okay.
But that's dependent, because we have that kind of jog that goes back there that puts it in the mix.
A little drawing I did.
Yes.
Yeah.
I took our second subzone and wrapped it around the.
Yes. Okay.
Single family residential. It means there's not a lot of land there, and divide that land into two subzones. You know. Yeah, that was it.
Yes.
Yeah.
But it lines up with American Quartz, so for what it's worth.
So are you saying that the transition there is probably as about where the Warren Street property line ends on the east side?
North side, yes. Well, the east side of the Warren Street property.
If you go on the east side of the Warren Street property before it turns from like AF's commercial to residential, because the Warren Street funeral home is in commercial.
I'd have to look at my drawing.
Does that.
So the south boundary,
so
we have.
Yeah, so is this. This is. So would this be the Warinsky, and its property line ends right there?
Yeah. Is that the home?
The
home?
Funeral home, yeah.
Yeah, all I know is I went.
It doesn't further extend back more.
When I went to American Fork zoning, based on this roadway here, what I found was GC2 plant commercial zone to the back side of their property, wherever that is. And then it goes to R1 9000 single family residential, which they call one family residential. So
did you say 9000?
It says R1 9000. That's what I copied from their zoning map.
That's really small. Those houses are not that small.
Yeah.
A lot.
So what I did was I used those lines in a non-arbitrary manner to stretch our subzone. Not everything I do is arbitrary. Around the single family residential. It's not perfect because, frankly, our office retail, I think, is what was really designed to buffer between single family residential and commercial. There's, you know, that doesn't, I don't see how you do.
If you look at the smart property with that dog leg, you can see the intent of the commercial zones to buffer the residential.
And that's why they
turned neighborhood retail zone.
Surveillance. I mean, he's saying this essentially formed a buffer between the single family residential. Not as strong a buffer as this does.
Right.
But I thought, why not go ahead and stretch that around? It does make, I mean, this property, most everything that's conditional use in this subzone is also conditional use in this subzone. So it's not terribly hamstringing the developer, but what it is suggesting to the developers, you've crossed a line when you start going that way and getting closer to these homes here. The rules start to change.
On a setback, they're not changing.
There are some things that don't change.
I brought it up as a setback.
It's still commercial.
And on height, I don't believe it changes it.
You'd have to redesign. You'd have to redo. They're not going to be talking about rewriting that subzone. You know what we're talking about,
yeah.
Right now.
Because right now there's not a great deal of difference between those two zones. The impact on the neighborhood.
There's not a lot. It was more of almost a, hey, developer, you are getting over next to the single family homes.
But you're right, in the actual application, the change isn't that dramatic. You'd have to do something more, such as off retail or whatever. But then you're really starting to affect that property.
You don't want to, how's this? You want to leave the property open for the belt. You don't want to have the belt come in and say, well, I can't, based on this line you put here, I can't do anything.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. It's just we're in a situation where that is butting right up against single-family homes. And our job as a commission is to find a way, if we can, to mitigate that somewhat. That was just a first stab a year ago, I think, when I drew that.
Yes.
So do we want to do something more? And if so, what and how?
The reason that I even brought that specific thing up is there's nobody now planning to develop it. If we're going to make a change has to be now.
You're right.
So they can put in a 15-foot landscape and a one-way road and then a building. That's totally legal right now, and that building at 30 feet back can be two full stories. And if it's got a flat
roof, even what I've drawn doesn't exist.
You know,
that doesn't even exist yet.
No, yeah,
that's not even part of it.
It's not zoned, really. It's zoned commercial, and I think it would be interpreted, and I think it would be a good cause for interpretation to treat it as neighborhood retail, because that's the adjacent property.
Right.
Yes.
But this will just make it official, and it'll give it an official designation. We may even want to go so far as to designate that on that map that from the property line of the residential to the end of the office neighborhood is such and such feet, so that it's not... so that there is a defined area there, rather than just a line.
What's the pink one called? Our second zone? What is our
commercial
mixed use.
Mixed use.
So right now we don't have anything in commercial mixed use that says here are the rules, except when you get within so many feet of a single family residence.
No. What I'm saying is we may want to look at defining.
Those lines
that area
are similar.
They are. These lines are even.
But they're not defined. It doesn't
not,
say.
I'm not saying define the place of those lines. So that somebody can come in and say I know exactly where the neighborhood retail starts.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Whether it's.
But does it have any
impact? Feet, I don't know what that is.
Even if you, again, as you were pointing out, there's not a lot of difference between these two subjects.
There's not, but the same thing did come up with Rosegate as far as where does the subzone end?
Yeah, that's true.
That's why we got that weird shaped building.
So it would help future councils, commissions, staff to have that be a defined area.
Right now, if we were to codify that, our only recourse, I think, is as a commission to encourage a developer away from whatever we feel is unacceptable here, these single-family homes.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have much more than that other than the rules within these two subzones, or that one subzone, if we were to use this map, to try and enforce that, short of making some changes. Well, I mean, we do that already through our conditional use process. What I'm suggesting is, because we're getting near these single family homes, is there any change we want to make at this point, as John said, before they make an application?
I was just looking at 4.3.1 saying that we take a 330 and make it 45. That was all that was in my mind. Just tell them they got to be a little bit further back.
45. Looking at that.
And that's just the number.
Okay,
just,
so let's take that. Let's take 45 and look at that number. If you took 45 feet off the back of his property lines on the city's property there, does that leave somebody enough room to do anything with the property? That's something you would need to consider.
Well, it's going to force everybody into one of these strip malls along there.
It will do something like that.
How deep are those lots? The residential, single family.
I don't. It's not
a single family.
I just go use that caveat best.
Hey, Jeff.
We don't know how
deep those single family lots are.
They're not that deep.
100 feet.
So 45 feet is half the width of one of these lots, or half the depth. So 45 feet puts you about right there.
You would just want to leave them enough space that if they were constrained to develop in that subzone, they still could. So you're not creating a junk piece.
Do you think people will just develop within that subzone?
I wouldn't venture to guess what people will develop.
I would think that, well, that's...
I think ideally they'd want to master plan the whole thing and do it because, like you said, most of the uses that are in the neighborhood are in the other one. So you could do both, but you wouldn't want to handcuff somebody because if I'm looking at buying a commercial property, I'm looking at buying the one that's closer to 4,800.
And you're saying possibly they could leave their rear apartment.
So you don't want, I don't want to foresee a situation where it's the city, and I know the city's smarter than this, but sells off a portion of their land to do a development adjacent to 4,800, giving up that prime spot, leaving what's adjacent to residences and to just be a weed field,
something we have to maintain.
It's like that in back of Walmart.
Yeah.
There's the land back there.
The Philip Edison piece there.
That's a garbage piece. I've never had anyone.
No. Which you could end up here. We don't want it.
We don't want to do the same thing here. And I don't know that that was their intent there because it's a quarter piece. It's just not on a heavily trafficked lot and there's not much you can do with it.
More dentist office and value.
The only thing I've ever seen proposed there is a skate park. So that was from a kid. So I admire
it. Oh, I mean, that's a good point. You could end up with just that subzone property on its own. And we've hamstrung that subzone so nobody wants to buy it.
I don't believe we want to do that. I don't think that's long term wise. So
how deep is that park?
It brings us back to basically the rules as they are, but as a commission, so like we did with Rosegate, trying to mitigate as much as possible the impact of whatever development is planned there on those single family lots.
Precisely. So go back to John's point of 45 feet.
I just grabbed
I just threw that out there, but you know, you're looking at if you're going from more impact to less impact to even less impact. That's how you get there, is by increasing the setback. Because right now it's the same setback as the zone that's supposed to be more impactful.
But you're suggesting his suggestion hamstrings that.
No. I don't know because I'd have to look at the 45 feet and say, what does that do to the property? What does that do to the development of that property?
It's roughly half the depth.
I would hate for the commission to say we want it to be 45 feet, and then that makes it so it's almost impossible to build a building on that. So
you can also move that subzone along too.
That's true.
Yeah, there's nothing.
No, there's nothing.
It's fictitious now.
Frankly, right now we can move it all the way up to 4,800. So, I don't think we want to do that necessarily because, again, we're starting to restrict developers.
Sure.
We want to keep this attractive. That depth there is approximately 600 feet.
Yes, 626.
How much?
626.
Is that to the street?
Yeah,
from the back of the property line to the
4,800.
Edge of the street is about 600. So
if you took 45 feet from that, that's still even a good 500 feet.
Even if you took a fourth of that and said, okay, 150 feet, this is going to be mixed use, and then you add another 45 feet, that still leaves you with 105 feet
that mixed use as well.
To develop as a building, so it could still be a significant amount.
But you're going to have to.
It's not huge.
But that's the point, though. You don't want a huge building.
You don't want a Walmart there.
No.
But if they did want to develop that all as one piece, they really could put in another big box retailer. They would just, because they're encroaching on that subzone, they would have to make sure they're still 45 feet off. So it still goes in your favor.
The thing I'm concerned about is if we limit that space back here, you're going to have nothing but a bunch of strip malls across there, which is what we're trying to avoid. We want something that'll be amenable to the city, meeting our criteria and our architecture and everything, instead of a strip mall. And I'm with the people that live back here. Yes, I'd like to see that 45 feet there. That's given them roughly 500 plus feet to build something in here.
So this is the mixed use office, so.
So, help me out here. In Lehigh, the theaters, that's strip mall around the theater, right?
Which one are you talking about? American Fork?
Either, is it American Fork?
Yeah.
Is it American Fork? Pioneer Crossing?
That's American Fork.
Yeah.
Okay, that's American Fork. Well, it's Lehigh if you go to.
Lehigh is Thanksgiving Point.
No. If you go to Costco's
Lehigh.
Home Depot is in Lehigh.
Yes.
The theaters
are American Fork.
Okay. Theaters are American Fork. Those theaters. So where is it Rodizio Grill that's in there and everything?
Yeah.
Okay. That's strip mall, right?
Yes.
There's strip malls and then there's strip malls. There's strip malls that look like garbage and then there's that. That doesn't look like cinder block crappy strip mall.
But it's got an anchor.
Yeah,
it absolutely.
Otherwise, you get more on State Street.
Yeah.
I didn't even call
that
difference, but
40 years. Yeah, okay. I'm just saying, no matter what goes in there, it's going to be a series of small buildings, whether they're attached or not. That's the only thing that can fit in that space.
Have you been over to the theater down by what's the mall down on? University Park.
Talking about AM or East Norm?
University Theaters?
Yeah.
University Mall?
Yeah, that's nice. You go down that little boulevard and it's retail restaurants and so forth on the other side,
yes.
And the anchor's right at the end. You just park your car anywhere, you just walk the whole thing, go get cookie, go see a
You do the same thing that River Bottom.
It's actually really nice, yeah.
But the average daily traffic on those roads compared to 4,800 is like negative, but so.
Yeah. Well,
I mean,
several times.
Several times.
I just say several times.
In terms of supporting that.
But I mean, the idea is there that the anchor does bring in a better strip mall. You know, you could have an anchor such as, like, I forget if it was the point, I think it was you. The technical ass place in American Fork moved across the street, you know, on State Street.
It was me, yeah.
You pointed out.
And there's the two little units that are south of Technoglass that are still empty.
I have been paying attention to that since you said that,
yes.
And they have not done anything. And you look at the
I drive every day
on
the way to work,
and
drive past it.
On State Street, and I don't even know what that road is that goes out to the freeway there, but that's still a high ADT, and it's still empty.
A lot of traffic.
But part of that is because of the way that road's designed, and there's some access.
You can't get in and out.
You can't get in
and
out.
It's like the water ground. The railroad tracks killed the water ground when it was a real theater because there's that one little lane.
Yeah, it's hard to get
the
in.
The railroad tracks really messed up.
But then you find, I think Pleasant Grove's finding the same thing, the same problem along Pleasant Grove Boulevard because they have that island strip in the middle. And so
yeah.
The only thing that they
you
can build is a fertility center and a couple oil businesses. So we don't want to handy. This isn't really the same thing because we're not building a major corridor here, but.
We'll have 10 Mexican restaurants.
I'd like
one.
That's a little.
One wouldn't bother.
I think
one
would
be okay.
Yeah, I don't care. We'll get the Mexican stuff.
I'll take any restaurant. Okay. So when we talk about setbacks, what about height? We discussed height.
Wait, on setbacks, I was just pulling up Walmart's 45 from the houses to the north,
okay.
And the Charleston 45 from the. That's from the property line.
To the south?
To the south.
Okay.
That's good.
So this is
still 45. Maybe 45 is a good number.
It wasn't an arbitrary number.
It was based in fact.
Well, it was, but it isn't now.
I like it.
So put 45 now.
Height, we visited height last time we had the discussion. Do we want to talk about that at all?
I really like the way
I read it, read it, and it all makes sense to me, but I had to read it about five times to
get
it to
make sense. Jeffrey typed something. Do you have that?
I don't.
Jeff retyped.
I thought you said Jeff retyped.
We're on really close terms.
I call him Jeffrey. Yeah.
What? No, you're in trouble now.
It was. Did you still have a copy of that? I can read
it. I do not.
Okay, so let me just read that real fast. It says 1-3 story building. Okay, so let me back up. It's taken from the current language. It's reshuffling some stuff to make it make a little bit more sense and
yes.
Then striking out
some
of the other stuff that probably needs to be left out.
Yes.
It says 1-3 story buildings are permitted, although 2-story buildings are encouraged in order to more fully convey the desired architectural theme. Buildings within the neighborhood retail development
may be erected to a maximum height of 30 feet. And then it says height is measured from average finished grade to the top of cornice or parapet for flat roofs and the midpoint of rake for slope roofs. An additional height bonus of 1 foot per additional 2 feet increase from the required setback may be granted up to a maximum height of 50 feet occupied space within the permitted zone, permitted 1 to 3 stories. So there's that caveat that's added so that you can't
stuff. So it's an and, not a or.
Yes.
Which Lehigh and maybe PG says or, and I still think that's a mistake.
I agree with you.
So then my question then is, we're taking that from 35 feet to 30 feet. Now,
right.
We want to make a distinguish between those two zones that in the mixed-use zone, it's 30 feet, and in the neighborhood's 35 feet, or do we want to leave them both as 30 feet? Because 30 feet, if you're measuring from the midpoint of the rake, is still a building that could be closer to 36, 38 feet, depending on the rake.
Mm-hmm.
So if we're measuring it from midpoint of rake, are we still, are we okay with it being 30 feet midpoint of rake? That's okay. So that was the changes that was made, and there's some other minor ones.
Yes.
With unoccupied space, and it says in parentheses such as cupolas, false dormers, etc. And so any other change, major changes of 30 feet. So I think that we've addressed height. That was what we discussed last
yep.
time we discussed this. So. And building size. This goes back to scale. Building size shall be reviewed by the city council and potentially approved based on such items as building placement, aesthetics, noise control, lighting design, traffic control, etc. to give a feel consistent with the overall commercial development as well as the community as a whole. We've talked about the building placement. We've talked about aesthetics other places. We require a noise study, we require lighting studies, we require traffic studies. Really the only thing that's missing here is possible language about large facades. We saw it with Walmart, we saw it with Rosegate.
Well, 4.2.4.
4.2.4, it talks about breaking it up, but is there language that we want to add?
We can run the facades and everything like that.
Yeah, go your way.
I mean, if you're talking about size, if you're going to say it's only square feet.
Commercial design guidelines actually used to say that.
That's
no. It was removed. It was removed, and size limitations on square footage were taken out. And I think that was intentional because I think city found that they weren't attracting the anchor that they want.
Okay.
So,
like again, using Rosegate as an example. I would have preferred that broken up into three buildings or something like that,
yes.
where no single building footprint shall exceed X amount of square footage, which sounds like it used to be there.
Used to
be
that.
Couldn't you do like Pleasant Grove did, though, where they make that requirement based on the kind of building? Like Pleasant Grove put that specifically for congregate care.
I think it's not a bad thing to at least look at. I wish we would have had that. I wish we, because it is mega. It's huge.
It is.
It fits within the envelope that's defined in the current guidelines. And so
but I mean, if you look at just the building size requirements that they were supposed to follow, building placement, aesthetics, noise control, lighting design, traffic control. I mean, there's any traffic studies.
I'm not in any way suggesting
no,
they're
no,
not
I
compliant.
I know you're not. I'm just saying that I think this is one of those areas that our commercial design guidelines come up short if you're trying to pitch a vision and have whatever developer comes maintain that vision. Go back to that vision.
I think that's a good thought because, you know, if a Walmart's coming in a major big box, that's one thing. We've got, you know, again, another, what I would, you know, it's quasi-residential and that thing wanders all over the place. It's so nice to have language that...
So would you say buildings that are residential in nature or housing in nature?
Then
you're picking out one aspect of the commercial when would you limit the size of a retail building?
Well, all I'm suggesting right now is that I'm putting two extremes. I'm saying big box
and something that's dwelling units. I don't know where that line is. Then we start to regulate maximum footprint.
Do you pick just one?
And we have a precedent that we can look at and decide again, similar to density, how we feel about it. If that's something we want to do. It's the only other way I know of regulating how big a building can go on a site. We've designed an envelope based on height, setbacks, and that's really it.
We define these in the residential code. We define buildings on minimum square footage requirements. That's for that some little shed being the home that people choose to occupy. So there are other places in the code where we have square footage requirements. Maybe not a main floor, asking for living space. So
you're saying it's not out of character?
It's not out of character with our own code,
right,
to have some.
Which is good. And I would suggest that maybe we look at a nearby precedent. And that may be something else we need to look at before next week. Again, if that's something we want to bring in, it sounds like a good idea. Is that the same link?
Yeah, it's just a link to their code, and just go to there.
Jeff, if you put the restriction on mixed use office retail and not have such restriction on the neighborhood retail.
Or any residential that's in the lobby.
But what do you do when you have
somebody that sits on both?
Sits on both,
yeah. Like Walmart.
Well, Walmart straddled and technically probably should have got a variance.
So
if that was in place now, then they could get a variance for that because it's one large, it's mostly on the neighborhood retail.
I can't speak to what went down with Walmart. I wasn't here for that. Although it's interesting to read that. So on the Congregate Care Code for Pleasant Grove, was it just, it was just, how do I phrase this? We could make this square footage requirement only for when the building is residential in nature, and then retail loses. You'd have to redefine residential in nature, which would be.
They're very specific. They define assisted living, they define independent senior living, and they define congregate care as all three separate things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's, at Lehigh, that's something similar. And I think that's useful.
So, well, I understand the square footage requirement on a building that's residential in nature and commercial zone. I can wrap my mind around that one, but I'm having a hard time wrapping my mind around something that
is commercial.
It's commercial in nature, and limiting the size of something that's commercial in nature and commercial zone. So, if I'm the son Best Buy, which I don't think the building stores anymore, but I want to build in Cedar Hills for some weird reason. If we limit the square footage, then they might say, okay, well, we're too big, we can't do it here.
Well, I'm suggesting we do.
So, is it just residential nature?
Well, again, you get into assisted living, and you're crossing the line from residential into commercial. It kind of straddles the line.
It does.
So we have to define. What I'm suggesting is that a building that's made up of multiple units, you know, call them dwelling units, if you will, whether it's end of life or that's where my house is or my home. I'm suggesting that we don't right now have any way of regulating that. That sort of thing is allowed in our commercial zone, and it's allowed to be really big.
Right. So let me throw another wrench into it. Let's say we do say that if it's a building is retail, then there's no square footage requirements. What if that building is retail on the main floor, and we've said that we're okay with the second floor being
residential?
At that point, we're still okay with that whole second floor being residential, even though it may exceed their square footage requirement?
We can spin endless hypotheticals. I don't have an answer to all of them, but But it's going to, you're right, and it's good for discussion.
Because right now, that would meet the current design guidelines of being ancillary to whatever is there commercial.
Right.
But that doesn't fall, like you said, it doesn't, that wouldn't apply to assisted living because that caveat is not
right.
A footnote.
Because it's not residential.
It's considered commercial.
Right. And right now, because it's considered commercial, we only have height and setback restrictions. And when we meet those height and setback restrictions, that's it. And you know, maybe
height setback and landscape.
Maybe everyone's okay with that, but what I keep hearing in our meetings is that our communities are not okay with that.
Yeah.
And so this is the time for us to suggest to City Council ways to mitigate that. But you're right, where do we draw the line? I'm suggesting we look at a neighboring precedent.
See what
we may not like anything they're doing, that's okay. But I'm not sure where else to go to see what some of us are doing. We could just refer to Pleasant Grove's
code.
It's
all going to be.
That would be.
Just if it's people from Pleasant Grove, who knows?
Shot across the bow.
Yeah, they don't have any conditions.
We've kind of talked about facades. What else on those three zones on building facades?
And we have these all typed up, all these suggestions and things that we've talked about over the last year. At this point, we seem to be beating the bushes over and over and over again on things that we've already made a decision on. I thought tonight we were going to have something typed.
We kind of got through a little more systematically.
Yeah, there was a lot of stuff we haven't.
I don't recall ever having a discussion on any of these things that we've talked about tonight. We talked about height, but that's.
I have notes here, which is what we have.
Not on facades. I don't recall it on facades.
It sounds like we're reaching the end.
Yeah.
Getting closer.
We may have it done by the end of
the year. Is there a parking signage? We kind of skipped all those and jumped right to the heights and
Houston doesn't have any zoning.
What's that?
The first of Houston doesn't have any zoning. Because, I mean, from the way I'm looking at it, building facades is the last little section here in these subzones that we need to talk about. We talked about the other things. It says, long and monotonous walls and roof planes are not permitted. The apparent mass of large buildings shall be minimized by manipulating building form by using offsets and recesses and variations in height. Smaller and individual buildings that tend to break up parking areas and create visual and constraint required.
The only problem I have with that is the last word.
Required?
You just said smaller buildings are required.
What's smaller?
Exactly.
Smaller than a big tree or a little tree?
No, but my whole...
Exactly.
There's no way that anybody using common sense, reasonable person is going to say that Rosegate is a smaller building. And yet this says smaller individual buildings are required.
But it also says large buildings if they are half a floor.
Exactly. So
it's
my point is
contradictory language.
We've just
right.
said a contradictory language. You can't say required, you have to say encouraged.
Well, if you're going to say encouraged, why say it at all? It's like saying two stories, three stories are permitted, two stories
sure,
are encouraged.
Yeah.
All you can do is say this is the maximum allowed.
Okay, then eliminate sense.
I agree. Well, and if we're going to talk about sizes, then that becomes a. Then
so
it goes away.
We talk about what Pleasant Grove is doing with concrete facilities and the site. Do we want smaller buildings on certain types of?
Well, if we're going to limit, yeah, if we're going to limit size, then that becomes.
Well, then that becomes moot. I mean,
right.
It
that's
doesn't
what we do.
I mean, Walmart's a smaller building. It's only what 135,000 square feet.
It's smaller than
a big building.
The American
it's smaller than it's smaller than the
okay.
one, it's smaller than the 155,000 square foot they came with.
It's like saying smaller than it's like less than X.
If we're not going to define it, then
which we're starting to do now. So we're going to define density. We're going to define intentionally going to define size.
For certain types.
Based on typology.
Yes.
Which I think is a good thing as long as we're all okay.
Yeah, well, I mean...
I think it's what our community wants.
What I'm hoping to do is give you guys a redline copy of all the changes, and then we review it for a meeting, and then the next meeting is the meeting where...
But when are you going to do that?
October.
October.
And then in November we vote on it.
Because next week we're going to discuss these building size and density.
We're going to do a little more, come back.
For 2 weeks, excuse me, week and a half, and then we're done. We should be done that night.
And then October we have the red line, and November we do.
October we have the red lines, we all go through our red lines, and we say, look, John, you really knocked this out of the park.
I wonder which way you were going to go with that. You only have one meeting in November, which is November 10th, and we have no meeting in December.
So November 10th is the great final day.
November 10th is the great final day. Unless, I mean, I don't have anything going on in December. We can call a special meeting.
That will not go on in December. I'm on.
Okay. My point is that we are nearing the light at the end of the tunnel here. I think we've gotten a lot of things done. And I think the Planning Commission will be happy to send this out to the Planning to the City Council.
Facade. Strike the last sentence, and we'll handle it in building size. Fair enough.
It's kind of an odd place for it anyway.
I agree.
It should have been in the paragraph above.
Do you want to add it into the paragraph? I would have put it at the very beginning of the section and just tell them.
We're in a little building.
Do you want to add that into the paragraph above? Because it still would be contradictory if you're not taking any.
Strike it, and then we'll talk about building sizes. That's.
It's got to be in line.
It's just completely contradictory. Yeah.
But I think it's something you need to find. If it's something you desire, you do need to have it defined somewhere. And just in this different section.
We got to put something in building size that
right.
says so what size is
right.
level.
Right. So anyway, I think.
That's why we've talked about.
If we define building size, then the sentence is redundant.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so it goes out.
So it's strikable, it's redundant, if.
If we go ahead next 2 weeks.
Yes.
And establish building size.
Yes.
That's good. I just don't want to quick eye before we adjourn. That's the correct.
You get the adjournment more than he does.
Have a look.
Well, I was under the illusion tonight that we were going to have something we could look at from what we had talked about previously, and evidently it was an illusion. So, I would entertain a motion to adjourn.
No, he's got a comment for
just very fast. I went to the training session a few weeks ago, PG's Planning Commission, and they had a gal come down from the state.
Meg Ryan?
Burnett?
Something we may want to look into, she made a presentation to the Planning Commission and just walked them through land use. What is a conditional use? It was really quite good. And something we might want to think about is having her come.
A few years ago, but I think one of them left.
It was a nice informal Q&A with her. You know, we tend to think we understand what we're doing, and we do to a large extent, but it takes a while to really understand what it is we're doing. And she just asked some plain old questions to the commission, and they responded, and it was just a really nice, informal, she knows her stuff, and it was really educational. I didn't stay with the whole thing. There was nobody else there, it was just their commission, and
I was at a training day with her, and they're open. She's with the Utah League of Cities and Towns.
Yeah.
I mean, they're open to doing trainings with the city, with any city, with whatever city. So they're always willing to come and
just a thought.
Share that with them.
What's up for the new year?
Could be, yeah.
I mean, let's get through all the members of the commission. Haven't been.
Well, it's not a bad idea, actually.
That's a new one.
Might onboard
a
way to train them.
So.
I move that we adjourn.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Motion passes. It's one of the few things you can do.